Thomas Edison had very little formal education. In fact, he was only in school a few months before his mother pulled him out and began teaching him herself. She encouraged him in reading, writing, and arithmetic and allowed him to pursue other interests that appealed to him. Always a curious boy, he was particularly fascinated with mechanical things and chemical experiments, which his mother encouraged. How did it come about that his mother pulled him out of school? And why? According to a rare interview Edison gave to a now-defunct literary journal, TP Weekly, which was published on November 29, 1907, Edison's mother's staunch support and belief in him made him the successful inventor he became. Here's what it says. One day I overheard the teacher tell the inspector that I was addled and it would not be worthwhile keeping me in school any longer. I was so hurt by this last straw that I burst out crying and went home and told my mother about it. Then I found out what a good thing a good mother is. She came out as a strong defender. Mother love was aroused, mother pride wounded to the quick. She brought me back to the school and angrily told the teacher that he didn't know what he was talking about, that I had more brains than he himself and a lot more talk like that. In fact, she was the most enthusiastic champion a boy ever had, and I determined right there that I would be worthy of her and show her that her confidence was not misplaced. Thomas Edison's mom spoke encouragement, life-giving words into her son's life and gave us one of the greatest inventors in human history. Because of her staunch belief in her son and her words about and to him, the world has the light bulb, phonograph, camera, telegraph, generators, microphones, alkaline batteries, cement, and a host of other things. Words are powerful. As Mother Teresa said, words which do not give the light of Christ increase the darkness. In today's chapter, the writer of Hebrews describes the heart challenge we all face and the antidote for it to be fixed. Listen to it in Hebrews 3, 12 through 13. Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is called today, so that none of you will become hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. We are told that any one of us can find our heart moving into unbelief. The writer says that we are to be aware of that enemy. And before we can even be afraid, we are told that there is an answer to it. It's encouragement. Encouragement is what keeps our heart soft. That is the power of encouraging words. Those kind words don't just give us a Thomas Edison, they give us strong, faithful Christians. Can I vent for a moment? I want to give you my pet peeve of religious encouragement. It's when people give you the preface before the encouragement. They say something like this: I don't want you to get a big head or get prideful, but you preached well, you sang well, your words were powerful. Their preface waters down the encouragement. I want to tell them, you're not the pride police. Just say something nice without the caveat. People are so discouraged today, and a word of encouragement gets them in the game. So give them a word of encouragement without your concern for their pride. Be more concerned for an unbelieving heart than for a prideful heart. That means just say the good words. More people fail for lack of encouragement, I think, than for any other reason. Encouragement is oxygen to the soul. We don't have enough encouragers out there. We need more encouragement in the home and in the church. Who knows what a word of encouragement could do for your spouse, your child, or the person you sit next to at the job? Just a great job could get someone through the day. We need to make deposits into people's emotional bank accounts. It will help them finish their day, their week, their life well. Day-to-day encouragement. Send someone a text of encouragement. Make a quick mom and dad phone call and encourage them. The people you think don't need it because they always look happy and many times are the ones who need it most. A pastor friend told me about something that happened in his church. An elderly lady told him when he buries her that she wants a Bible and a spoon in her casket. He asked her why. She said, "At all the church fellowships I've been to over the last 75 years, when they come around after the dinner and give us spoons, they're saying the best is yet to come, the dessert. And when I die, I want people to know that the best is yet to come." Well, he'd heard the story before. It's been going around for years, but that's not the end of the story. My friend said there was a part B. A little while later, he needed to step down from ministry for a season due to some personal issues. It was a hard year for that pastor to be attending the church he'd led for decades, but who was now on the sidelines. After the year was up, he prepared for his first Sunday back. He was nervous and scared and wondered if the church would even want him back. That first Sunday back, he stepped up to the pulpit, watched in amazement as the entire congregation stood. They didn't even applaud. They held up spoons. They were encouraging him and telling him that the best is yet to come.